This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
At This Friday, you know what happens every single Friday. We deal with family matters. And because it is a family Friday, today we're talking about... Hey, I've never spoken about this before, but I've always been curious about it. I'm so glad I've got guests that are going to help me go there. Transracial families. So let me make a typical example. So transracial families is often indicated when it comes to adoption, right? But it goes further than that. It's when basically placing a child who is of one race or ethnic group with adoptive parents of another race or another ethnic group. Right, we're talking about how transracial families actually manifest each other within the family home, and how is it that the children, the parents themselves, navigate a space where there could be racial diversions within, especially extended family members, where there's a lack of understanding within the society. How do transracial families coexist within a South Africa of ours? So transracial families can also remain refer to, let's say, mom marries a white father, or, you know, so, and then mom is black, dad is white, or mom is white, dad is black, children are biracial, they're mixed race. So you've got three different types of race in this house. Technically, you've got a black, white, and then you've got somebody that would say biracial or mixed race. How does that then transcend within the family home? And how do you have a conversation about the racial dynamics of it all? And when do you start introducing race? Because it is, let's face it, it's there. When do you start introducing race as a topic when it comes to this kind of conversation? And let's get into it. And may I ask, if you are in a transracial family, so let's say that you were raised by, and many times you were raised by a white mother and you are black, or you were raised by, you know, a black mother and you are white, or you are actually in a home right now that I've just described where your partner is of a different race to you, right? So your partner is of a different race and therefore your children are a different race. So I made an example of mom is white, dad is black, children are biracial. Or mom is black, dad is white, children are biracial. How do you have a conversation around race in the family home? And how does it manifest itself on the outside, extended family members and the like? So let's get into it now. Joining us in the studio is Beverly Bukes, who is a parenting and managing director of Oasis Heaven, a registered child and youth care center in Gauteng. Beverly, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thanks so much, Faith.
And we've also got Isabel Dooley, who's our registered trauma counselor and psychologist. Isabel, always a pleasure speaking to you, and welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you so much, Faith, for having me.
You know, this is one of those conversations that you really have to go into the heart of it. I mean, you can't even beat about the bush, as it were. Beverly, you know, you have got five children.
That's correct.
Yeah. And your five children, you've got how many are black, how many are white?
Two are white, three are black.
Two are white, three are black.
That's right.
Okay. Take us from the... Take us from the beginning. You're a white woman in South Africa, and then there you go. What was this journey?
So I'm a white woman married to a white man, and we had two biological children, so our oldest two are white. And then I got when I started working at Oasis Haven and became involved in the orphan crisis in the country, we started seeing the need and we started speaking about adoption as being a way of growing our family further. So we then subsequently adopted two of our daughters, and then our fifth child is in foster care with us, but obviously still considered one of our children.
So the two daughters, I mean, I know that you got one when they were newborn even.
That's correct, yes. So our youngest daughter came to us as a newborn, in foster care in the beginning, and then we were later able to adopt her.
Yeah. How was that adjustment? I mean, let's be real here. I want us to be completely real. Introducing a black baby in a white home where the children are white.
Yes. So our youngest was obviously then the second black child coming into the family. And I think it was a little bit more difficult for our now 19-year-old, who was two when she was adopted. Mm. And I remember the day we picked up the youngest and she said to me, "Now I'm no longer the only black person in the family." And I think that, and she was five at the time. So it really indicated to me how much she was feeling different from the rest of the family.
Yeah. I mean, at five, to say, "I'm not going to be the only black child in the family."
That's correct, yes.
Sure. That must have been a shock for you because, I mean, you got her when she was, what, newborn?
She was two. She was two. So she'd been with us for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think that it just kind of was that moment where you realize, oh, they are realizing, they are thinking about it. It's not, you know, oh, we're just part of the family. It's okay. Mm. It doesn't matter. Mm. We don't notice color, whatever it is. She actually had been thinking about it.
At the age of five.
At the age of five, yes.
We're going to go deep into this. Mm. Isabel, you know, as it is right now, when we're looking at adoption, adoption is at a decline in this country, especially from the place where the department lacks accredited social workers. But also these days, foster care is seeming to be the popular kind of way, simply for foster care grant for those that actually want to take advantage of the system. There are about 500 children and 340 parents on the register. But most of the time, they would actually say, you know, the adoptive, you know, the social development and the like. And I've saw social development actually saying that they would like to actually place same race or children within a same race family, right? Black children within a black family, white children within a white family, Indian children within an Indian family to resemble a natural family. But is it time that we start evolving, or is it that the way to go, especially when it comes to these transracial families?
Well, Faith, to be honest with you, I always say we need to always focus on the best interests of the child. We cannot look at it from our own perspective. If there's a loving family out there that is ready to take a child who is of a different race than theirs, I don't find a problem in how this can impact the child psychologically or impact their development in any kind of way. It's better to have a child placed in a family with two loving parents than to have a child growing up in a family where they're in a foster situation with other foster kids or an orphanage, because there then they don't have the type of care and support, I would say, that is beneficial for a child's development, psychologically speaking. Mm. And especially in this country, we need to stray away from saying a child must be given to black parents if the child is black, or a child who's white must be given to white parents, because we live in a diverse country. And as we approach Heritage Day, we need to recognize that we are a nation that is a rainbow nation with different cultures, with different ethnic groups within our own culture. So it doesn't matter where you send a child. What matters is the people within that home who can give the child that love, who can give the child that stable home environment that a child actually needs. It has nothing to do with race when it comes to getting children placed in homes that have loving families.
Yeah, but race, the children recognize color, and whether or not it, like, you know, they recognize race. I mean, I had a conversation with a friend of mine about 2 weeks ago, and they are white, right? And the wife is black and the children are mixed race. And the kid will always say, "Daddy, you are white. I am brown." You know,
absolutely.
So kids notice that, hang on a second, we've got a home with three different kind of races.
So once you are a child who's placed in a family with people who look different than you, right? We are not trying to ignore the differences. We are trying to learn about each other's differences. Therefore, we can know better how to encompass, how to raise this child as a human being who belongs now to this different family of these two different races. Does that make sense? So it's about teaching our children about where they come from and where mom comes from, where dad comes from. And then the child can pick a difference or middle in between all of that, because sometimes when we are a family, we're building our own traditions, we're building our own values. And then that cultural race thing comes later, beyond the other values that we instill as families in our homes with our children. So I believe that you don't stray away from the race question. You rather tackle it on head on, where even as a child who's black who goes to a white school and you're the only black child, you recognize that I'm different from these people. Mm. And that's where you start interactions of conversations of what's your culture like, and you start tasting their food and they start tasting your food. And that's why I say it's so important that you're having this conversation a day before Heritage Day, because that's what our country is about. It's about all the diverse cultures that exist, and it's about us learning about each other's cultures so that we can actually build a stronger nation of tolerance and understanding that, okay, this is how Tswana people do, this is how Bedi people do, this is how Xhosa people do, so that we can all live in this diverse rainbow nation. So if your house is a rainbow nation, that's how you take it as well. It's a celebration of culture. It's a celebration of diversity. It's a celebration of teaching each other of what we know from each other's heritages and backgrounds and where we come from and where we were raised.
Yeah.
Because you could be black but raised in a different Western kind of way where you don't fit in with other black people, but you're black. Does that make sense? So,
and I want us to go there. We're gonna have to go there as well, because in school it manifests itself in a different kind of way. With other kids, it manifests itself in a different kind of way. And Beverly, with your children, for example, I mean, your child at 5 recognized that, and probably even before then, recognized that my mommy is white. My mom is very different to me. My dad is very different to me. Assimilating to that, did the child now identify as I'm a black child in a white family? How did they navigate? Because I'm thinking a kid that small won't be able to navigate at that level of maturity, right? The hair texture is different, number one. The eyes are different. Mm. The skin color is different, you know? You can't run away from that.
No.
So do they know that they were black? Or did they know that they were chocolate?
We've never really spoken about you know, chocolate and Milky Bar and that kind of thing in our family. Interestingly enough, my older adopted daughter, when she was little, so younger than 5, obviously, she thought she was white. And there was a time where she kind of could recognize any black person in our friendship group or whatever it was, and be able to say they're black, but she thought she was white. So then did learn. I think the younger one who came to us as a newborn, to be honest, I think she might have thought I was black and, you know, the world revolved more around her. And so different personalities are going to, you know, realize it at different times, accept it in different ways. But I agree that the conversation needs to be had. We need to be embracing it and celebrating it and not having, you know, you're a black child in a white family, but we are now a multiracial family. And how do we make that work? How does that look for us as a family? So, you know, it's not you must do things that fit with your culture, but us white people, we're just going to sit here. How do we as a family all learn about the different cultures? How do we all celebrate it?
How did that manifest then in your family? Because these kids are growing up, these kids have got white family, white parents.
Yes.
There's a culture, there's a principle, there are family dynamics that are involved with this. I mean, you guys have got your own traditions.
Of course.
As a family.
Yeah.
Right? And that child goes to school.
Yes.
Where they're confronted with other black children.
Yes.
Right? Who have got different cultures that speak to maybe a black culture.
Yes.
And then they have to come back home and say, Mommy, but this person, Seaport, doesn't do things the way we do things. And yet, how does that conversation actually take place in the family background, taking into cognizance that the child also wants to feel as accepted as possible as being adopted?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we speak a lot about, like, how do we have, you know, what is our family culture? So unfortunately, we don't always know the actual culture of a child when they're adopted. So if they were abandoned as a newborn, you don't necessarily know what culture they are. So you can say race-wise, you know, you're black, but as which culture are you? Are you Zulu? Are you, you know?
Tswana, Bedi.
Exactly. And so we don't always know that information. So for us as a family, it's been very much about how do we create our own culture when it comes to culture. My oldest daughter is obviously white. She's married to a Kenyan guy. She's pregnant. They're going to be having their mixed race baby. So we're a very mixed family. And we've celebrated it that and accepted it and loved it. And I think that's made it easier for our children. But I think they're also, with me working at a children's home, they're also very aware of what their alternative may have been, which was to grow up in a children's home with a children's home culture, actually, because you, again, have many cultures. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something that they've struggled with too much at school, and I'm not saying no children ever do, but they've very much been able to accept that we're a mixed race family and that we have different, my husband's Afrikaans, I'm English, so we already have, you know, many varied things that we bring into the culture of our family.
We're going to go deeper, and the question we asked, do you have a transracial family? So mom is black, or a dad is white, or mom is Indian, dad is white, kids are biracial. How do you navigate the conversations of race, especially amongst the children and with your extended family? And more than anything else, would you also choose or opt to adopt a child who is outside of your race? Have you ever thought about it? That actually, I want to adopt a child outside of my race and raise a child, whichever child it is. We're going to get into that conversation. I'll take your calls on 0861-987-000. How are you managing the racial dynamics within your family if you do have?
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, we're talking about transracial families. How do you navigate the conversation of race when the children are one race, the parents are a different race, mom and dad are a different race, and you have to live within the ecosystem of South Africa? Just before we go back into this conversation, I want to remind you of something that is also coming up at about 10 to 3 this afternoon. You get to stand a chance to win the ultimate VIP experience for two passes to the pre-Royal Polo Day Gala Dinner on Friday, the 30th of September, and a two-night stay for two at the Royal Marang Hotel with access to the VIP marquee worth 20,000 Rand. You stay tuned to find out who the winner will be at 14:51 right here on Power Lunch. Can't wait to give away that wonderful VIP experience courtesy of Liteka Eventique and Rustenburg Local Municipality. It's worth 20,000 Rand. Stick around for that one. That is coming around at 14:51. But let's get back to having a conversation around transracial families and how do you navigate it within a bigger ecosystem. How do you do it, Beverly, with extended family? Because extended family in South Africa, and I use my family as well, not everybody is as evolved. Not everybody is open. Not everybody is welcoming. Not everybody is accepting. It could even be, and I don't know how many people have experienced, you can have a white boyfriend and you take your white boyfriend to your gogo's house. There will be conversations around that. I once took my white ex-boyfriend to my gogo's house. Man, oh man, was it a great Christmas. It was conversations around this, right? So these are the realities that we live with. But how do you handle the extended family side of things where not everybody's tolerant?
I think that what's most important is to start the conversation with the extended family early on. So while they won't be the people that will decide whether or not you should adopt at all or adopt transracially, they do need to be included from the beginning so that they also have time to process whatever they need to process along the journey. So that's really just my main advice, is start the conversation early. You're not going to necessarily be able to change people's minds. Some people may be more accepting than others. Mm. What I find is that generally children will win people over. And so even if they were against it, as they learn to love the child, generally, you know, they warm up and it becomes more natural, and it can even change people. Yeah. But don't wait. Don't wait until, you know, the child's coming home next week to start the conversation. Do it early.
Do you ever find that some of the family members push back and said, no, we don't see this as our own?
I think you do get cases like that. And I've worked with families who have been in the adoption process and the adoption journey who have experienced that. But I think it's often less than what we think it's going to be. I think people are more accepting of children being adopted, and they're okay. They're willing to work with it. But you're obviously going to have different situations dependent on each individual family.
Well, we're going to get deeper into it after the news, though. It's 2:30 now. Let's get your latest Empower News.
Power Lunch with Faith Mangope. Weekdays 12 to 3 p.m. on Power 98.7.
Now we are talking 24 minutes ago before the top of the hour. We're still in conversation around transracial families. We're looking at adopting across the racial line, but also having children that are biracial if the both of the parents are a different race. How do you navigate the race conversation? How do you navigate the conversation of spirituality, right? How do you bring in the conversation of spirituality? And if the child is adopted, how do you bring in the conversation of biological parents. 0861-987-000 if you'd like to contribute to the conversation, as we're still with Beverly Bukes, who's a parent and a managing director of Oasis Haven. Beverly's actually got 5 children. 2 are white, 3 are black. And then Isabel Dwili is our registered trauma counselor as well as psychologist. Let me go to Trichville first before I go back to the phone lines. Raputi, hi.
Good afternoon and good afternoon to your guests.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, Faith, personally, I couldn't give a damn what anyone says.
Mm.
I choose who I bring into my life. You have people with their own issues want to live their lives through you. No. It has nothing to do with them. Who I choose to marry, who I choose to adopt, who I choose to love, has nothing to do with anyone. It's either you love me, if either you love me as part of my family, you gotta love my choices.
Love me.
You might not agree with them, but just accept them.
Because it
has nothing to do with you. Exactly. What are you losing in me adopting someone of a different race? What exactly are you losing? What is that taking away from you? What's your problem exactly?
I like it. It is as simple as being able to choose who you love. But when it comes to that young person as well, saying, look, mom, and I would imagine that Beverly, your kids call you mom.
Yes.
Look, mom, I want to meet my biological mom, my biological mother. Have your kids had that conversation with you as yet? Is it a conversation that you're still going to have? Because I can imagine if you raise children and they're your children, you love them like they're your kids. I would dread the day that somebody said, I want to meet my biological mother. I would look at them and say, I am your mother. You know,
absolutely.
But it is a conversation that unfortunately it does happen.
It does, yes. So it's a conversation that actually needs to start very young. Like, children need to be getting told their story from a very young age. Mm. So they need to know, for instance, one of my daughters, we do not know who her family is. We do not know anything about what the situation is. Whereas the other two girls have both had the privilege of being able to meet their birth parents. So it doesn't take away from me being their mom because they want to meet somebody who is part of them and part of, you know, their lives and part of where they come from.
Mm.
They still know that I'm mom. I don't fear that they will want to leave me for that mom. I think there's space, you know, for all of us. It's far harder for the one who we can't trace the family, who we have, you know, no idea of who they are, than it is for those who we're able to introduce them.
Yeah. And there's no other sense, and I can imagine for some families as well, there's a sense of, sheesh, man, but I there's that fear of, I raise this baby and this baby now wants to go and meet that other individual who carried them for 9 months. How do they get into that space? It's hard not to be selfish with your child.
Of course.
If you weren't selfish with your child, it means that we need to really look at love here. But it's hard not to be selfish with your kid.
Of course. But at the same time, if you know that you are truly bonded with your child, you truly love them, they truly love you, you want what's best for them. And what is best for them might be to answer those questions that they have. And it might be for them to have a relationship with a biological parent. That doesn't mean to say that they will want to reject you.
Mm.
I think those stories we hear of rejection, there maybe was never a solid bond between the parents and their child to start with. And that's why a child is willing to go, okay, I'm leaving to go to my biological family. Generally, sure. They'll be able to have space in their heart for both of you.
How then, Isabel, do we bring in the issue of spirituality, especially when it comes to kids that are adopted? So, you know, in some cultures, it's not all cultures, but in some cultures or African cultures, we know that the when a child is born, sometimes they are also introduced to their ancestors. Some of them would want to make sense and do certain rituals for ancestors to be introduced to that child, the greater family to be introduced into that child. But when a child has been adopted, so let's say for the sake of Beverly's kids, and the child is adopted into a family, there's that component as well. How do you navigate the space? place, or do you? You just go, no, this is how the spirituality that we practice is a spirituality that the child will practice.
So I think we need to, I think we're overthinking this a lot, because if someone has abandoned a child is now, I suppose, if you're speaking in that spiritual realm, introduced to different spirits now of a different culture, of a different race, because that's who the people who take him in. Because this is where we separate genetics from nurture, where we say nature versus nurture. Some people are just, for lack of a better word, they're the ones who provide the DNA to create a human being, but they do not create the personality of the human being or shape the personality of the human being, because they don't get to raise the child and give the child that home environment with the home values that that home comes with, if that makes sense. So if we're going to bring spirituality into it, those people who left you, and you don't know your spirituality in essence, because you're growing up as an innocent child who doesn't know anything. So the people who take you in will introduce you to whatever spiritual rituals they have.
So we say that the child is in a spiritual wilderness, basically. The kid is young, is innocent, a spiritual wilderness, and you take on whatever spirit of the family.
That takes you, because now your original people have left you, so you don't necessarily link with that. It's like you can't miss what you never had. But at the same time, some kids will be curious a bit later about who is my mom, who is my dad. And if you can't find that in the case of kids who are literally without parents, like we don't know who are your birth parents, you are just abandoned in a dustbin or something like that, it becomes that you take on the culture and the spiritual culture of your the family that raised you. That's the only people that you know. So whatever they do to celebrate spirituality in their household, whether that be through meditation, through rituals that they do, you follow that, because you don't actually have a spiritual identity. Remember, you're a child. You're a small baby who doesn't even know yourself enough to be told about yourself. So who tells you about yourself? The people you live with within that environment. And I think it also begs the question of, even when you have birth parents, sometimes they don't even know what their cultural background is, or what cultural rituals need to be celebrated, because sometimes people's parents separated, and then you don't know who your dad is, or you don't know who your mom is, because your mom moved. It's such things that create such a problem in our society as well. And we don't mention that. So I don't think it's a big issue as much as we make it, because a child becomes part of your home and becomes part of what you make in your home, and the type of values you instill and the type of traditions you instill into your child. That's who your child then becomes. So your child understands that I am black, but then I understand that with me being of this particular race, I was raised in this particular household with these kind of Christian values or Hindu values or whatever else spiritual rituals that were followed in my household that I was raised in. So it's such a beautiful, diverse conversation to have, but there's so many layers and so many different ways to look at this, because I've had clients where your child is your child. However, your child wants their dad, and you don't tell your child where the dad is because you guys had a falling out, or vice versa. The dad is raising the daughter or the child or the son, and the mom is the one who ran away and left them high and dry, and the child wants to know, who's my mother? Well, you don't know where your parent is, so you get to live through the lens of the parent who's raising you, who's giving you the values, who's taking care of you day to day, who's showing you the world and what cultural diversities that you guys celebrate as a unit, as a family unit. So it's one of those conversations that are so deep, are deeper than just saying, should we just leave kids with other people, other races? It's better to leave kids with other races than to have a child be raised in a one-parent household. We know that statistically, psychologically speaking, children who are raised in one-parent homes don't do better than kids who are raised in a two-parent household. They are more prone or predisposed to anxiety, to depression, to suicide, to all these terrible things when a child is raised in a one-parent household. And that's far more dangerous than having a child be raised by a different race group of two parents.
Oh, we're going to go back to the phone lines. Mpo, who's on the road. Hello, Mpo.
Yes. I just need to make my comment with regards to the gentleman who said he doesn't give a damn what the other people say.
Mm.
You know, it's need to think that in life, yes, you might not give a damn, but things happen. You might pass away and you did not give a damn. So where will that child then go? You know, there might be maybe a marriage, there might be a divorce and something happens, and where would that child go? So you need to really give a damn and include the family. And even if they do not agree with you, but you need to let them know and let them know that in this case, if this happens, this is what might happen to your child. Because if you pass on, sorry, then if they didn't give a damn, they might not give a damn about that family, yeah, that child as well.
That child will so not be able to adjust to the extended family that they have to live with now.
Yes.
Got you.
They would not be actually loved because of they were rejected from the beginning.
Sure, that is a very hard one to actually have to stomach, Mpo, but that's a very valid point that you're raising. Xolani in Malmilodi, hi.
Good afternoon, Faith.
Yes, sir, hi.
Yes, man, happy Heritage Month and Heritage Day in advance.
Thank you.
You know, Faith, to me, I don't have any problem whether blacks, they get married to whites and whites get married to blacks, because I do have white people who are married in my family, something like that, or colored and something like that. But my problem is that, you know, relationship, it's not about that cling, that fling, or that spark during the time from our cultures. That's where our personalities are shaped, our characters are shaped, from how we were brought up and so on and so forth. So I so wish that but wabanyalanang le makhoa, or any person who is from a different far race, is that they could go for a counseling so that you can understand how those people are living, their cultures, their traditions, and so on and so forth. Because of relationship is not about that feeling. I know a lot of people, by long, they are from the urban areas. Like a person from Mamelodi, I've got a friend of mine who got married deep in the rural areas of Mpumalanga. They divorced. She divorced simply because of the tradition. She was not used to the type of life and how she's supposed to conduct herself and all those things. She's from Mamelodi, something like that.
So assimilating to the culture becomes very difficult.
Yes, it becomes difficult because we are what we are because of how we were brought up.
Sure.
Something like that, yes. That's what I wanted to comment about. So I don't have any problem about anyone getting married to whites or colored and so on. But let's just know their cultures. Let's just make sure that we are going to compromise or learn their cultures. Because if I get married to a Nigerian woman or a Ugandan woman, they are doing things differently. And reality will clock in immediately when I'm with that person at home.
I love it. Thank you very much, Xolani. In parting shots, Beverly, I mean, your kids are raised in a home that is multiracial,
yes,
right? And culture then becomes a big conversation, right? And how do you bring it up? And you were saying that you talk about the family culture,
yes,
now, right? Not necessarily the culture that each the individual black,
yes,
children would belong to.
Yes.
But do you encourage exploring of, for example, their culture, if especially for the one that was two, I think, who does, or the one that knows who's got the mother
yes,
still there?
Yes. We definitely don't discourage them from, if they want to know more about their culture. So the one of my daughters that has met her mother, her mother is from Zimbabwe. She knows she's, that's her heritage. She is not too interested really in finding out more, but she does have many black friends at school. She, picks up on language and she's just living her life as a teenager. So I kind of believe that it's just important to take things at the pace of the child. If they're interested in knowing more about anything, whether it's their culture, whether it's their biological family, whatever it is, supporting them in that, but not necessarily pushing, saying you have to learn Zulu because, your mother was
yeah,
or whatever. So just supporting, encouraging, and allowing them to kind of find their own way, I think, as we do with any of our children.
I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you very much, Beverly, for your time this afternoon.
Thanks so
as
much.
Well as Isabel Dwili there, our psychologist. Hey, have you ever thought about being in a multiracial household? Those are some of the conversations that you need to start considering. Spirituality, race, extended family, school, other children, other people. I'll listen more.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.